Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
We are moving away from human reproduction. We are moving into government control of the production of human beings. As you well know, Obama is a dictator in the making. He's an embryonic dictator. And this embryo of a dictator, if he is not stopped, if this embryo of a dictator is not resisted, if there is no resistance to this embryonic dictator that we have, my friends, anything is possible. No one man should be permitted to have passed 17 executive orders in less than 2 months. And yet that has happened right in front of your eyes. And so this most dangerous radical college professor has bypassed Congress, bypassed the people. He's telling you that you wanted the Brave New World when nobody asked you what you wanted. But the fact of the matter is that Obama's policy is not moderate at all. It is not a moderate policy, according to the article in today's Wall Street Journal. It will promote a whole new industry of creating and destroying embryos. It will include the creation of human embryos by cloning for research in which they are destroyed. And it forces American taxpayers like you, who see the deliberate taking of human life in the embryonic stage as unjust, to be complicit in this murder. Obama made a big point in his speech of claiming to bring integrity back to science policy. And he said he wanted to remove the previous administration's ideological agenda from scientific decision-making. I agree with the authors that this claim of taking science out of politics is both false and misguided. First of all, the Obama policy itself is radical, leftist, and political. It is red meat to his Bush-bashing, Bush-hating, Republican-hating base, and yet pays no more than lip service to the new science, the new breakthroughs in science cells that are biologically equivalent to embryonic stem cells without the need to kill or create human embryos. In other words, from adults. And I want to pause here again for those of you who don't have science background. It's okay, you don't need to. What are we talking about when we say stem cell research? What is a stem? Think of a stem on a tree. From a stem grows a branch. From a branch grows the leaf and the fruit. It's the same with human cells. You start with a stem cell, in essence, really an embryonic cell. It's not really an embryonic cell, it's just an early cell. And from let's say you have nerve damage, and you want to repair this nerve damage. What you would try to do is get a stem cell and encourage it through scientific methods to grow additional cells, additional nerve cells, which then can be used to restore your damaged nervous system area, okay? But you don't need to do this from embryos. This can be done from adult cells. Obama knows this, yet Obama is a deceptive pretender. Obama is a radical Marxist by every definition. Now, I've been calling him a neo-Marxist for about 60 days because I've seen what he's been doing. I won't be the last. I'm only going to be the first, as usual, in defining what this president is. I am always ahead of the curve. I am warning you that you're being dragged down an unbrave new world and you'll regret it in the future. The fact of the matter is, Obama revoked not only the Bush restrictions on embryo killing research funding, but he also revoked the 07 executive order that encourages the NIH to explore non-embryo destructive sources of stem cells. You understand that? In other words, it was a very political claim. And getting to that point, his claim about taking politics out of science is not only a lie, but it's anti-democratic. You see, the question of whether to destroy human embryos for research purpose is not really a scientific question, is it? It is a moral and civic question about the limits of science, the uses of science, the ambitions of science. And as I described yesterday, we understand what happens when science is not controlled by a government, and that can lead to a human experimentation. Mengele, the mad Nazi doctor, used living Jews to experiment upon. The real issue here is how we're going to treat members of the human family at the very dawn of life. Are there not alternative paths to medical progress that respect human dignity? Of course there are. You understand this? And so, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I believe in democracy. But if we want to destroy and mistreat the most vulnerable human lives, we are doing so at our own moral peril. And for Obama to say that we are taking politics out of science is a very, very sad, sad statement indeed. Now, this stem cell debate is going to continue, not only on this show, but throughout America. It has not been continued on CNN. It has not been continued on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, more snotty nonsense by chicks. It's a done deal to these anti-democratic forces of the media. And they don't even understand what they have done here. They have no idea. Father, forgive them, for they do not know how they have sinned. They have no idea how they have sinned. But I have a moral obligation on this radio show, don't I, to use the gift not only of my minor, fleeting fame and importance in radio and in thinking in America. And I repeat, minor, fleeting fame, because that is what God has given me. Minor, fleeting fame is not to be used for my own aggrandizement, but to do God's will and God's work on this earth. You don't have to believe me whether I'm sincere or not. It doesn't matter whether you do or not. I don't care whether you think I'm the most cynical manipulator on earth. It doesn't matter to me. I go to sleep at night, and I sleep soundly. I'm not a perfect person. I'm far from it. I'm as flawed as the next man, if not more so. However, when it comes to this radio show is the most sacred part of my life. I know that this accident called talk radio, meaning my entering talk radio 15 years ago, this accident that saved my professional life from the fires of unemployment, the fires of hell itself, caused by the liberal social engineers who wanted to put me on the dustbin of history. This was not an accident. I'm not in front of you by accident. I'm here for a reason and for a purpose. Portland, Oregon, KXL. Michael, welcome. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I am a leftist, and I disagree with virtually everything you say. But the reason I listen to you on talk radio is because your arguments are articulate, well thought out, and I think most importantly, sincere. I really appreciate it that you don't just regurgitate the sound bites from the Republican Party. And I think
no, I don't. But you see, look, I understand that I'm not going to convince you to believe in what I say or believe in my way. But I know also that most, let us say, sincere activists on the other side are just as frightened of an overbearing government as am I. Would you say that that's true? Can we agree on that?
Absolutely.
All right. So the day they take away my freedom of expression, you're next. And you understand that as well. You do or you don't?
No, I do agree, absolutely.
No, I would if I were a left-winger. What do you think? You'd celebrate the ending of talk radio today. You'd be next tomorrow on the internet. And that's why they stopped attacking the golfer, because it was backfiring on the Obama minions. Their own party was saying enough is enough.
Well, I think you're the gadfly to the party on the left. I mean, I think it's really important. I mean, you know, Socrates would agree. We need people like you to make our positions more honed and more intelligent on this side.
Well, you need people like me in order to make certain that the drink that you're preparing for me is of the proper potency. Well, look, I was young once and foolish and thought that the left-wing way had some truth. I was once a youngster, and you get older, you start to see things differently. But I would bet, Michael, that you had somebody or have somebody in your family along the lines of Michael Savage.
Family is, I would even say they're probably libertarians, but they don't subscribe to a particular party.
Right. But you're young. Are you still young or are you over 40?
I'm 29.
Well, you're still young. Most young people tend to tilt toward the left, and they voted for Obama because they didn't want the old ways, and they didn't want McCain because they knew he was a continuation of Bush, and I felt the same way. But you can't really sit there, Michael, and I'm not here to pick an argument with you. You've been nice enough. That you don't think Obama lied to you. You can't really believe that.
I I voted for Obama. I have felt betrayed by Obama, especially my primary reason for voting for him was he was promising to withdraw the troops from Iraq, and now he's talking about keeping them there. So especially with that, I feel
Listen, when it happened, remember 2 weeks ago I said I'm shocked he's moving the troops from Iraq to Afghanistan? But what, that's going to be a war that the left agrees with?
Right.
It's like a shell game here. You got to ask yourself, what's in it for the Democrats that they want troops in Afghanistan? Let us put aside any security considerations for the moment and be very cynical together. I kept criticizing Bush and hammering him because I was saying it was all about contracts at a certain point. And I was relentless on this contract business in Iraq. You know that if you listen to the show. Now, I suspect that the same thing is going to go on in Afghanistan. When I heard from a returning Iraq veteran that meals, which in the past had been prepared by Army cooks, in other words, an enlisted guy would be a cook, another would be a tailor, another would work in the laundry. I heard that a division of Halliburton was providing the meals, and every time a guy lined up for a meal, the government was billed $16. And if he went back for refills, they got billed $16 again. It confirmed my worst suspicions, Michael.
Well, you look for who benefits. Yeah, I don't see a clear benefit to the American people for staying in that unwinnable war.
So, but what do you feel about Obama saying that while he's against the earmarks, he's for them?
Well, like you said, it is double talk. It's new speak, and it confirms my worst fears. I got to admit, I was...
Uh-oh, now you're in trouble, Michael. I hope your friends are not listening to this interchange. You're going to lose some friends after this.
I don't think so. I think most of my friends feel the same way. We were counting on them for actual change, and sending troops to Afghanistan, just like you said.
No, but it's not only business as usual. It's worse than business as usual. How do you guys feel about – you're younger than me by many decades – how do you feel about you're inheriting a budget mess that you'll never pay off? What do you think is going to happen to you when you're 50?
I doubt there'll be as many entitlements as there are now, that's for certain. I'm afraid of how Social Security is going to collapse.
Well, let me ask you, as a young leftist who's honest enough to have a discussion with me without screaming and yelling, how do you feel about illegal aliens getting jobs in the so-called Porculus bill? Doesn't that bother you?
Well, yeah, I'm not a leftist in the sense that I think we should open our borders and teach everyone Spanish. I'm a leftist more on social issues, more just on personal freedoms. But as far as the illegal alien
thing... Well, it sounds like you're more of a libertarian in that regard.
Yeah, a bit so. But as far as the illegal alien thing, I've agreed with you since the moment I turned on your show that it's...
Uh-oh, Michael, I don't know. I sense that... you know the old joke, you know, if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind.
Winston Churchill.
Is that who said it?
Yep.
And you're pretty literate. How about the one, I don't know who made this one up. What do you call a liberal with two children?
Oh, I don't know.
A Republican. What do you call a liberal with four children?
I don't know.
A fascist.
That's funny. Yeah,
I'm joking. No, I mean, you know, the world changes. Michael, you're a good-natured guy. I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity in a plain brown wrapper so that your friends don't see it arriving on your doorstep.
Savage.
City again. Gil, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. As to Madoff, you cannot hide $50 billion. That's astronomical figure, and it cannot be done. Number two, the reason why the feds are not going after him is because they will prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are people within government who are connected with Madoff. There are people within all walks of life, multi-billionaires, who are in on this deal as well.
I agree 1,000%. Because the question is why he suddenly took a plea and there was no trial. Now, the judge, by the way, Denny Chin, could have said, I reject your plea and we're going to trial. He could have done that. You know that, of course. You understand that, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In other words, U.S. District Judge Denny Chin had the option of rejecting Madoff's plea and ordering a full trial during which discovery would have occurred and during which lawyers for the investors would have demanded an awful lot of information that would have embarrassed the United States government going all the way up the chain, perhaps past the SEC. And we don't know how much further it would have gone, but There's no question in my mind, knowing that Madoff gave money to Schumer, he gave money to Dodd, he gave money to all of the top Democrats. Now, that's the money we know of. It was chicken feed, legitimate campaign contributions. But, Gil, we don't know what other monies may or may not have been transferred and to whom.
Tell you where the money is, sir. Go to the Swiss banks, go to Liechtenstein, go to Luxembourg, go to Bimini, go to Aruba, go to Bermuda, go to the various offshore banks. You will find them there. Go with Ritz, go to the World Bank, go to...
Well, let me ask you, are you an investor, Gil?
I'm an investor, sir, and I didn't lose a cent because I invested in municipal free bonds.
Your friends probably who invested with them were mocking you, saying you're hiding under the mattress, I'll bet. Gil, did you have any friends who were taken by this Ganoff?
That's how the Kennedy fortune, that's what they did. Joe Kennedy left it as a bond trust fund for Ted Kennedy and the rest of the boys.
No, but Gil, did you have friends who invested with Madoff?
No, I did not.
So you don't run in those circles at all?
Not. But I want to tell you right now, you send 25 FBI agents who have legal and accounting training, because these are the prerequisites to becoming an FBI agent, and you tell me that within 6 months, using the RICO, invoking RICO and what have you, you cannot find out the spin-off where the money is. That is an absolute unmitigated lie.
Do you believe his wife and sons and brother were involved?
Absolutely. You don't get $60 million, Nishmir Nishmir, out of the blue. That $60 million was given by the husband, and I believe that the wife is in on this as well, whether she actually took part in it or she's a receiver of stolen goods.
Innocent Ruthie from Far Rockaway? You're accusing innocent smiling Ruthie like this, Gil?
Well, let me tell you something. Smiles don't fool me. Sociopathic people have the most pleasant of smiles.
You know, I found that all my life, Gil, is that the more mild and pleasant the person, the less I trust them. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be abrupt and loud to be a trustworthy person, but I found honest, gruff people to be easier to deal with.
Just remember what Balzac, the French writer, said. Behind every great fortune is...
Oh, there's a great crime, yeah. Well, that's not true. Come on, Gil. I know some very rich men who never took a penny from anybody.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
You know what the evidence of a true democracy is? Loud, forceful disagreement in the political marketplace. When you hear no loud political discourse, you know you're living in a dictatorship. When you hear the Amen Corner agreeing with everything the president does, you know that it's over and the republic has died. As long as you can hear voices saying, I disagree with you, Barack Obama. I think you're terrible. I think you stink. I think you're wrong. I think you're crazy. Then you know you still live in America. You still live in America where there's a hope, where we can still have political discourse. The day it becomes illegal or immoral or dangerous to disagree with a president is the day you've lost your freedoms, my friend. So stay tuned, because I am a lightning rod of change. I am a lightning rod of hope. I am a lightning rod of disagreement. I am a lightning rod of the changes that you are hoping for, which is a change for the better rather than a change for the worse. Sure, he's giving us change. But this is not the change that most Americans want. And I would say even those who voted for this college professor did not expect so much radical left-wing activism so quickly. Sure, they expected something other than George Bush or that sad old man John McCain, but they didn't expect the neo-Marxist agenda to be forced down their throat. That's not what they voted for. It's all a lie. I want to digress for a few moments because I've been hammering you pretty hard on this issue for a few hours now. I've had conversations with some strangers over the last few days, and I found out that I have listeners where I never knew I had them. I knew I had listeners far and wide, and I knew that the listeners ranged all over the economic scale and all over the ethnic scale and all over the political scale. And I also knew that I had many listeners behind prison bars, and that's because people who are trapped behind prison bars have very few options to exercise their minds. Many of the people behind prison bars never had formal education. Many of the people behind prison bars never had the opportunity to read and to try to understand for themselves what is going on. And they find my show, they may at the beginning not have understood, they would have said he's the biggest A-you-know-what in the world, but after they've listened to me for a while, they start to say, you know what, this guy makes sense on this, he makes sense on that. And they've heard me say that all of us are one mistake away from being locked up in this country. You've heard me say it. We have more people in prison proportionate to the overall population than any country on earth, and that's a very sad statistic. There are over 1 million people locked up behind bars, sometimes for minor infractions. No one is arguing that we should have tiers for the murderer, the rapist, the pornographer, the counterfeiter, the terrorist. No one is saying that. But there are too many people behind bars in this country, and they're thirsting and they're hungering for something from the American media other than talking about breasts and panties. Somebody talking about something other than a hockey puck flying into a cage. Somebody talking about something other than a moron swinging his arms and hitting a ball. They want to hear something about their life and the meaning of life and why they're behind bars and what they're going to do with their life when they get out from behind bars and how they can make a meaning out of their lives. And I am talking to you if you are in a prison cell or on a Gulf Stream. And I know I'm talking to you if you're behind a prison bar or on a Gulf Stream or in a Chevy or in a Prius. Why? Why do I exist? I exist, my friend, because you want me to exist. If you didn't want me to exist, I wouldn't be here. The reason I exist is because you need me. The reason you need me is because there's a desert out there. There's a desert in the American media, and I am wandering in this desert with you, not trying to make the Red Sea part, but trying to make you see within this Red Sea that you are a part of this sea of life. And this discussion today, if we never have another discussion about this, and I don't know that we will, I often don't get this worked up, but I'm very worked up because I have seen what happens with people who want to do good and where it can lead to. Watch out for the do-gooders. The do-gooders will nail you to a cross faster than you can say Roy Rogers. And they will do it in the name of progress. They will do it in the name of advancement. They will do it in the name of helping you, but you will be hanging from that cross and begging for mercy nevertheless. I am telling you that embryonic stem cell research is not a noble endeavor. It is the exact opposite. I am also telling you that adult stem cells hold as much, if not more, promise. And the only reason this college professor acting as president, with a stroke of the pen today, said to you, we are going to have embryonic stem cell research again, is because he's paying back yet another constituency, which is the abortion racket. The abortion racketeers have broken the champagne open today and are still celebrating as I speak, because they are going to make new fortunes again.
Savage.
You can have all of the scientific research along this line that you wish without sacrificing embryos, because you can derive these cells from skin cells, for example. This was not true a few years ago. Now, the whole reason the left is pushing this is because the abortion racket is behind it. Do you understand this? Michelle in Michigan seems to understand it. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to, and I completely agree with you from working on the adult side. It is about what do you want the cells to do. And, I mean, if you want the cells to, you can't create an organ outside the body yet. So, if you want the cells to repair and build substrates that can build between one neuron, another neuron, a branch, so that the neurons can crawl across, and help out the spinal cord injuries, like
yes.
The last caller,
yes.
Then the adult stem cells can do that. And they
Hold on. You are a cell researcher?
Adult stem cell research.
God bless you, because you're a godsend for me and millions of people listening to the Savage Nation. My good lady, please explain what an adult stem cell is and where it is derived from.
The adult stem cells, first of all, most so commonly, they're derived from bone marrow. They're also from cord blood, peripheral blood, fat stem cells, which have just recently come across, the skin stem cells. But basically every tissue part in the body has resident stem cells, and resident stem cells can regenerate any tissue that is part of that tissue of origin.
So, Michelle, we no longer need embryonic stem cells?
I think the question is what you want the embryonic stem cells to do.
Why do they argue that, of course, we know that adult stem cells can be used to create lines, but we must have embryonic stem cells because they are superior? Is that true or false?
I think that's false.
Why do you think that's false?
The route that I've seen the embryonic stem cells take right now, embryonic stem cells, and they've shown it in animal studies, if you take pure embryonic stem cells right out of culture and you haven't differentiated them, they're in their undifferentiated state. And they're also, I mean, the embryonic stem cells come from in vitro fertilization clinics.
Right.
They're less than 5 days old. So you take them, just the embryonic stem cells, the round spheres, and you put them in to animals, they form teratomas. So they become cancerous. So what they have to do is they have to so they keep them in this undifferentiated state so that they can, you know, grow up lots and lots of them. And so they can treat lots and lots of different people. That's the idea of it.
But hold a minute, Michelle. You're fundamentally trained in what? What is your field of learning?
Engineering.
What, bioengineering?
Yeah.
So you trained in bioengineering. But are you a cell scientist, would you say?
Oh, I've always gone on the cell side.
All right. So you're a brilliant young lady who knows this field inside and out. Do you have a political bias in this discussion?
I have a, personal religious bias, but politically, no, I'm...
All right, so you are a scientist, but you're also a person who believes in the sacredness of human life. I hear that. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, and so they're not incompatible?
No.
you've made the most important point of the day. I mean, I said it in a generic fashion earlier. For the last 42 minutes, I've been trying to make that point, which is that I am for scientific advancement, but I'm also cognizant of what happens when you start to deny the human element here. You start to look away from the human cost of scientific research, and you wind up with Mengele playing with human life. Isn't that fundamentally what you believe?
Yeah.
Michelle, I want to keep you on the show for a few minutes. Just tell the people what you mean by you're a cell researcher. Tell young people listening to the show what that means.
What I'm trying to do is bring cell therapy, adult stem cell therapy, and make a difference in everyone's lives. And, I mean, we're looking at cardiac, vascular, saving limbs, and also, and eventually neural when we...
Okay, but again, for the average listener who doesn't have any scientific background, you're on the same wavelength as those doing stem cell research, meaning cells from embryos. Only you're saying you can derive these stem cells from adult cells rather than from embryos. Isn't that all you're saying?
Well, better yet, from your own cells.
So your own cells. So if a person has an illness and, let us say, a spinal cord injury, please explain what you mean by that.
The idea on the adult autologous side, which, I mean, is very safe. You take your own cells, you get a little prick from your iliac crest, and then your own bone marrow cells are expanded, under scientific discovery, trying to understand which ones you want. But that's what I basically do day in, day out, is try
now,
to
do you work for a commercial venture?
Yeah.
You do. You work for a company. We're not going to ask you the name of the company. But it's a company that's attempting to use adult stem cells rather than embryonic stem cells. Isn't that more or less what you're saying?
Correct. And we're in clinical trials.
Who funds your research, Michelle? Who do you get your research funds from?
We're public.
You're a public company. We're having a debate today about stem cell research. Why? Because our new president, the junior college professor, the far-left radical Obama, has written an executive order today saying that, presto magico, we're going to use embryos to derive stem cells for scientific research. This was illegal until now. You are saying you're in favor of scientific research of this nature, but it is unnecessary to kill embryos to derive stem cells, that these stem cells can be derived from adult tissue as well, including tissue from the person's own body. Isn't that more or less what you're saying?
Correct.
Well, it doesn't get any clearer than me figuring things out. And I've been given a gift from God, which is the gift of explanation. And I want to say this to you, Michelle. You're doing God's work, and I hope you know that. I don't know how you got to where you are in what you're doing, but no matter what influences come flying at you, no matter how you are tempted to think your work is not worthwhile or that people tell you you're an idiot, or why you're wasting your time, or you could be rich if you went down to in the embryonic stem cell research company in Atlanta, whatever. Stay with what you're doing, Michelle. You're doing God's work.
Thank you.
Savage.
Full in Oregon, Alan, KXL, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I made an observation, and the show was a repeat about a week ago. It went to commercial, and then after coming back from commercial, I didn't get to hear your explanation because it changed topics. And the observation had to do between the relationship of the perspective of a child and the elderly. And I also wanted to let you know that that's right in line with Einstein's theory of special relativity, special theory of relativity, stating basically that time was relative.
You're a very brilliant man, but I have to ask you to repeat the question. You're asking me to tell you what I think about perceptions of reality, the difference of perceptions of reality of a child and an adult, or a child and an old person?
You made an observation, and I've made the same observation, where I think you were sitting on your boat, and you said it kind of hit you that when you're a child, everything has a kind of a grand, bigger-than-life kind of feel to it. And then when you get maybe like I'm in my 30s, where everything becomes really mundane. And then
how a child sees the world. Well, I have a dog who has to substitute for a child, and so his perceptions are different than a child's. But, you know, you watch a dog react to things, and you see to a dog every sound is bigger than life, okay? It's the same to a child. To a child, it's all brand new. So what can you imagine what a rainbow must look like to a child? And as we get older, rainbows still inspire most of us, but we're somewhat jaded. I think that's what you're referring to, that kind of gross interpretation.
It is, but you said the observation was you start to get some of that back. I mean, as
when?
Time goes on, you start to, you know, smell the roses.
Oh, you're saying that as you get older, some of it comes back? Well, maybe I was in one of those moods for a minute. Maybe I don't know why it hit me. You're saying that I said that I was feeling some of those things I felt as a child again?
Correct. I mean, that's what you were saying.
Could have been I had enough B3 that day. I don't really know. I don't have any explanation. It could have been the niacin.
But that is right in line with Einstein's special theory of relativity, where he basically...
How so? What does he say?
He basically boils it down to where he's basically stating that time's relative. It's relative to the perspective of the person watching the train versus the person on the train. How time...
Well, there's another analogy which my friend, a physicist, repeated on radio last week, where he said the issue of monkeys on a typewriter. You know, monkeys are dancing on the keys of a typewriter and letters are typed, and people think that the monkeys are typing the letter. But in fact, they're just randomly dancing on the keys of a typewriter. Does that more or less fit?
No, I'm not really sure if that's really what I'm trying to convey, but...
Well, when you consider... Okay, let's take the analogy of monkeys dancing on the keys of a typewriter. That would be the news people today, the journalists. That because they're typing letters that are somewhat... literate, meaning that they're spelled correctly and they make sentences, they think that they're writing the news. But it has no relationship to what the news really is.
I do.
Or let's go back to Plato, where Plato said most of us don't see reality, we only see the shadows on the wall. Does that work for you?
That's closer. Like I said, it was just an explanation of an observation you made. I do remember being a child. I do remember... every once in a while.
Oh, you're saying because I said that you were able to relate back to being a child yourself and remember what it was like to be a child. I think most of us occasionally, when we're super relaxed and we're really in a state of calm, we can sometimes look back and look for a moment the way we saw it. We can see the world as we did as a child. I think that's true. Thank you for the... I don't know what to say on that. I think it does happen, you know, to people. I don't know. Sometimes I say things on the show and I can't remember saying them and I can't recall what I said. You know, you talk about 15 years of conversation. I wish I could have that kind of recall. I don't. I'm very lucky, though. We have good archives, the crew for my show, Phil and Beowulf. I mean, they're really great guys and they can almost access anything immediately. If I say, do you remember when blah, 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 they can hit. It's not yet that well, you know, organized, but they know it by now. They know me very, very well. I have to thank them for that. Guys, do you know what he's referring to? I wish you could find it for me for tomorrow. Ottawa, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yeah, I'm calling to support your debunking global warming piece that you have on your homepage. I've worked with hundreds of climate scientists for the last 10 years in many countries, and quite frankly, there is no consensus about the causes of climate change. A lot of the stuff that we hear, unfortunately, in the press tells us that there's this consensus, and so many of the scientists are actually very reluctant to speak out. But, you know, what you're doing and what others are doing are hopefully creating a climate where more scientists can actually say what they're really finding.
Yes, it's a little site on michaelsavage.com, which is called Debunking Global Warming, and the headline says, less than half of published scientists endorse global warming theory. That doesn't stop charlatans like Al Gore from saying all scientists, virtually all scientists agree. It doesn't stop politicians like Jerry Brown, the Attorney General of the state of California, going on NPR 2 weeks ago and infuriating me by saying all scientists agree that global warming is real and it's caused by man, and we now have to constrain industry in the hands of government. And they don't permit anyone on NPR to get up there and say, now, wait a minute, less than half of published scientists endorse global warming theory. It's amazing, the big lie. But then, as Goebbels said, when you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth. Right now, the liberals are telling the big lie, and they've turned it into a half-truth, which they take as the whole truth.
And I'm saying to media that frequently bring this up, I'm saying, prove it. Show us that there is a consensus in the climate science community. And they can't do it because there is no worldwide poll, and the IPCC only represents a very small fraction of the world's scientists. So,
right.
In fact,
and you know, one of the best, I got to tell you this, one of the best, you could take the average person who doesn't know science, and if you go on to Greenland Ice Yields Hope on Climate, to me, that was one of the most important recent discoveries, yet it's never been broadcast by the media. It was an international team of scientists, multinational team of scientists. They worked for years. You know the one. They bored 1.2 miles into the Greenland ice shelf. They pulled up the remnants, the DNA of plants and animals that lived eons ago. And guess what they discovered? The Earth was warmer eons ago than it is today.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. This is Michael. I'm live. Look, I just got off an airplane. I just been on a 6 or 7 hour flight, and I normally would have taken the rest of this day off. My head is spinning. I had a lot of trouble, but whatever. I have a victory to announce to every fair-minded patriot listening to this program, and I want you to call two friends to tell them to tune into the Savage Nation in this hour, because I may only be able to be with you for an hour. But when I got off this plane and I got into the place that I'm living in and I was able to get back online and I saw that Colonel Chesani has won and that a judge has rejected the rotten, stinking vermin in the U.S. government who have tried to put this hero into prison, I said, I've got to get on the radio. Now, many of you contributed a lot of money to the Colonel Chesani Fund through the Thomas More Law Center, and I want to thank you for the Colonel. He cannot be with us right now, but I can be with you right now. Again, I want to reiterate on the Savage Nation, a victory for Marine Lieutenant Colonel Chesani. It was announced late this morning. The Navy Marine Corps Court of Criminal Appeals sitting in Washington, D.C., released their unanimous decision upholding the dismissal of charges against Marine Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chesani on the grounds of apparent unlawful command influence. But I want to warn you that the case may not be over yet, and I will tell you more about that in a minute. There are vermin inside the Defense Department. There are vermin wearing uniforms who are lawyers, and I'll tell you this. I'm making a commitment. If they persecute Chesani any further, I will find their home addresses. I'll post them on the Internet. I will take 10,000 people, if need be, outside their houses. And if I have to go to prison, I will go to prison. I will not permit these rats inside the Pentagon to keep trying to destroy American soldiers and Marines, to appease the rat vermin in the American media, the scum in the government who hate the military. We've got to get together on this, and we've got to say enough is enough. You've almost destroyed this man's life. And if you want to toy with him any further, we're going to toy with you. We're going to use every legal means to make your life a living hell. If you don't get off Chesani's back, the minute I find out who's doing this to him, we're giving his home address on the Internet. I want 10,000 men outside that jerk's house. Whoever that jerk is in the Pentagon, who's trying to appease Bonnie Frank and Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton, every other military hater in this country. Now, let me go backwards, and I'll tell you what we're talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about? If you know what I'm talking about, and you contributed money to the Chesani Fund, and you recognize what a victory this is for a true American hero, I'm going to invite you to call 1-800-449-8255 right now in the Savage Nation. For the last 4 years, this American hero, a 22-year veteran who has served three tours of duty in Iraq, who served in the first Persian Gulf War and in Panama, has been persecuted by rats with law degrees inside the Pentagon. Vermin who must be rooted out and found out and turned out and pushed out. Investigated and persecuted for his involvement in a massacre that never happened, the so-called Haditha Massacre, named that by a rat in Time magazine. And I'll give you that man's name. If I had his home address, I'd put it on the Internet. My home address is on the Internet. I live with it. I look over my shoulder. I'll put his Internet address. I'll give you his home address. Any Marine out there who's listening to this show, I will post his home address. I will post the home address of anybody who's persecuting Chesani. How do you like that? I live with a swivel head. I watch my own back. I bar my windows at night. Let them know what it's like to live like this. And I do it because I'm on the side of good. They do it even though they're on the side of evil and they've gotten away with virtual murder. They've murdered our Marines. They've murdered our military. They've murdered America's honor. They've murdered our dignity. And yet some of them wear a uniform. They have law degrees, don't you know? At the time of the November 19th, 2005 Haditha incident created by Tim McGurk, I believe of Newsweek magazine, who made the whole thing up, interviewing Iraqis who had shot at the Marines. Chesani was the battalion commander of the 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, the Thundering 3rd, which is one of the most decorated units in the history of the Marine Corps. Now, this has been going on for 4 years. Listen to what Richard Thompson, president and chief counsel of the Thomas More Law Center, has said. Quote, Lieutenant Colonel Chesani, one of the most effective combat commanders we had in Iraq, was made a political scapegoat by the civilians in the Pentagon to appease the anti-war politicians and a liberal media. In fact, we now know that the story of the so-called massacre that prompted the Haditha prosecutions was a headline in a Time News article instigated by insurgent propaganda operatives, and I will add, fed to Tim McGurk of Time magazine. Get that right. T-I-M-M-C-G-I-R-K. Tim McGurk wrote this story, taking a feed from the enemy themselves, and put this man up against the cross. He crucified Chesani. Those are all my words. I will continue with Thompson's words. Quote, this nation has come to the point where we can't call terrorists captured on the battlefield enemy combatants. We release the terrorists out of Guantanamo and prosecute the military that our country placed in harm's way to defend us. Close quote. I think you should take those words very deeply. Obama has released terrorists from prison while continuing to persecute heroic Marines. And by the way, Obama didn't start this. It's that rat phony George Bush who did it. I have no respect for George Bush. I think he was the lowest of the low. George Bush released coke dealers. He released counterfeiters. He released every low-life rat that he could get his hands on. But he did not give a release to Colonel Chissani, even though tens of thousands of you begged him to do it. That tells you who George Bush is. Robert Muse, an attorney with the Law Center, the National Public Interest Law Firm, the Thomas More Law Center, has been defending Lieutenant Colonel Chissani throughout his prosecution, alongside his detailed Marine lawyers, Lieutenant Colonel John Shelburne and Captain Jeff King. Captain Kyle Killian, a Marine appellate defense lawyer, also assisted in this appeal. I want you to understand what it took. Now listen to this story very carefully. Lieutenant Colonel Chissani is the highest-ranking officer facing criminal charges as a result of the much-publicized and ill-described Haditha massacre, by the way, which never occurred. Again, I want to repeat, this was invented by Iraqi terrorists. It was fed to an anti-war reporter named Tim McGurk and picked up by vermin in the media like Wolf Blitzer. The criminal charges against Chissani stem from a legitimate combat action taken by four enlisted Marines in his command after they were ambushed by insurgents in Haditha, Iraq in 05. See, so our men were ambushed. And the actions of our men resulted in the deaths of several ambushing terrorists. They call them insurgents, I call them terrorists. Unfortunately and tragically, several civilians were also killed in the house-clearing operation. Now, I want to stop right here. I am not a Marine. I am not a former Marine. But I'm intelligent enough to read the rules of engagement written by George Bush, the hero National Guard pilot. Even George Bush, the hero National Guard pilot, missed a mission accomplished, had rules of engagement that gave the Marines permission to clear houses with various grenades and whatnot. And that's what these Marines did. Now, here's the kicker. Do you know that Lieutenant Colonel Chissani was not even present during this incident? You know, he was not even there. He was at a distant position. He was the commander. He wasn't even there. The men on the ground were ambushed. They fought their way into the room where the fire was coming from. They killed the people who were firing at them. On the way in, they accidentally killed civilians. And yet, Lieutenant Colonel Chissani was not even there, was criminally charged with failing to launch a full investigation into the incident. I don't think you understand that if he is convicted, and it's not over yet, because we haven't yet named the people who are going after him, I'm going to spend the rest of my life, if I have to, getting their names and their home addresses. I'm not going to let this go. It's because of me that he's released. Make no mistake about it, it's because of you that he's released. I don't give a damn about that blubber face called Limbaugh, who's done nothing for anybody in his entire career. I don't care about Wallbanger, that fraud. I don't care about them. They've done nothing for anybody. They've just advanced their own career. This is not about Michael Savage. This is about Lieutenant Colonel Chissani. This man could have faced 2.5 years in jail. He could have been thrown out of the Marine Corps after 22 years of service, and he could have lost all of his retirement pay. The holding of the military court today said this, and I'm the only one who has this, by the way. We are convinced the government failed to meet its burden of demonstrating beyond a reasonable doubt that the proceedings were untainted by the appearance of UCI, unlawful command influence. We are similarly convinced that an objective, disinterested observer, fully informed of all the facts and circumstances, would harbor significant doubt about the fairness of this proceeding, close quote. Now, here's the bad part. This decision, although it exonerates the colonel, could be appealed to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces and then even to the U.S. Supreme Court. This government under Obama has yet to announce whether it will pursue another appeal. If they do, we will give the names of the lawyers, we will get their home addresses, and you can go march outside their houses with your opinion. You live in a free... Yeah, play the Marine Corps anthem. Play the Marine Corps hymn. What these men have done for this country, was it not for the U.S. Marines and the Air Force and the Army, most of you listening to this show wouldn't be listening to this show. You would be citizens of a fascist dictatorship. Obama would not be president. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Was it not for this Marine Corps, how many men died taking islands and how many men died destroying Hitler? And look what they do to the best of the best. Take a look at what they do to them. Well, I'm going to take a break in a second here, and I'm going to just tell you that my head is spinning because I was in an airplane for 7 hours. Then I had a couple of incidents along the way. I was not going to go on the air. I know they played the best stuff for the first hour here. But when I saw this decision, and I realized that we played a role in it, mainly you, because you sent money. And remember what is going on here. It took money. Lawyers had to be hired. Lawyers had to be paid for. A defense fund had to be created. And yet we learned today that the government, which spent, I don't know the number. I heard it was something like $30 million to try to crucify Chesani. Do you know the man served 22 years? And not as a desk jockey? Do you know that he gave 22 years of his life in the Marine Corps? Do you know that he served 3 tours in Iraq? He served in the first Persian Gulf War and in Panama. Are you aware that this man was a combat veteran and the vermin with law degrees never fired a shot? All they did was fire off emails trying to burn a hero. We're going to wait and see what Obama will do. But I'll tell you something. I'm telling Mr. Obama and his minions in the Defense Department right now what we're going to do. If you dare persecute Chesani, you're going to have to go through 10,000 citizens, and maybe a million Marines will be outside your door. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talk radio is the most important medium left in the United States of America. I don't know of any other outlet in the American media that takes cases like this, makes them personal, raises money for them, and then sees a victory every once in a while. You know, I've been in radio for 15 years. In fact, my anniversary is March 21st, I believe, my 15th year in radio. And in all the years I've been in radio, which I entered quite by accident, I would say there have been some victories here and there, but they were never this personal for me. I don't know Lieutenant Colonel Chesani. I hope one day to have him on the program. I hope another day to take him and his family out to dinner, and I'm going to do whatever I can for his children and for him through various fundraising tools to try to make up in some way and say thank you for his service to this country, for what's been done to him by these vermin in the Defense Department who have persecuted him mercilessly. Months ago when this came up, I don't know how long ago it was, I played pieces of a movie that I told you a lot about, and I read from the book Paths of Glory. Do you remember? It was about an incident in World War I. In the movie, played by Kirk Douglas and Adolphe Manjou, who plays the French general, they literally sacrifice men. The French do. They kill their own men. And he says, we've got to invigorate the men on the front lines by killing the innocent ones in order to make the others charge, and we tell them to charge even though they're going to die, that kind of thing. And it's the whole trial about these innocent men who are about to die in their last night on Earth, not wanting to die, because no man wants to die. No matter what you see in the movies, no one dies heroically. Everyone dies horribly. And the fact of the matter is, that movie, Paths of Glory, is what George Bush was. George Bush was the Adolphe Manjou character. George Bush was the reason Lieutenant Colonel Chesani was prosecuted. George Bush was the reason Lieutenant Colonel Chesani was persecuted. George Bush was the reason Lieutenant Colonel Chesani was not exonerated. And it is in the hands of President Obama right now to say enough is enough, end it. And I want to again say, because I know Lieutenant Colonel Chesani would be saying it for himself if he could be here, and I don't think he can. Thank you for, his family says thank you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Again, if you want to know more about the case, please go to my website. We have press release from the Moore Law Center. We have the judge's opinion for those of you who are attorneys and want to read the actual ins and outs. It's far too complicated for me. My mind is much too simple for lawyers. I don't even understand what they're talking about because the whole thing was built on a house of cards to begin with. Somebody said, burn the commander. First of all, it started when the people who had ambushed our men got killed in a firefight. Now, in order to clear a room, they have to go in and throw hand grenades into the room, which they did. Then they have to kill the people who try to kill them. That's the way war is. It's horrible, apparently. So they did that. And then the people who did it to our men, who didn't die in that reaction, went to Tim McGurk of Time magazine. Tim McGurk, T-I-M-M-C-G-I-R-K, I believe, McGurk or Kirk. And he published a story which was picked up by all of the lowlifes like Wolf Blitzer and the other rats in the media.
Savage.
Morale, don't forget that.
The troops' morale, sir.
Certainly. These executions will be a perfect tonic for the entire division. There are few things more fundamentally encouraging and stimulating than seeing someone else die.
That's the Adolf Monjou character in Paths of Glory, which I talked about in a great length 2 years ago. But I got to say to you that, you know, a job is a job, a profession is a profession. There are some professions in the world that give you more satisfaction than others. There are days you go through. This business is like digging coal out of a coal mine. And then there are days like this where, although I'm truly bleary-eyed, and I didn't have a drink today, although it's St. Paddy's Day, I didn't have a drink. I'm bleary-eyed from travel and exhaustion and this and that. But when I came home and I saw that on my own website, God bless the guy who posted for me, Art Moore, when I saw that Art posted the Colonel Chesani victory, because it came from the Thomas Moore Law Center to my producer, Beowulf, who sent it to him. I said, oh, my God, what a great, great, great gift this is. Colonel Chesani victory, judge rejects government appeal in Haditha case. You got to read this. You got to look into the background to understand what we're talking about. I mean, many of you contributed. I heard the number was $200,000 to $300,000, the money you gave. I think I gave about $35,000 of my own money. And I'm telling you that talk radio is still the most powerful medium in the media. There's nothing more powerful than this than talk radio, which is why you have to preserve it and why you have to understand the government wants to silence us in more ways than one. They understand that the power that we have is greater than they have in some ways, because we have the people, they don't have the people. They have the power, we have the people, and I say all power to the people. Let's open it up to the callers. San Diego, Heidi, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you for posting this, since the media won't touch it. I live here in Oceanside. I'm a neighbor to the Marines. And as a citizen, I attend the hearings. I was at the June 17th hearing when the judge had to give them 3 days to respond, and that would be the government, because the judge wanted to throw out the case at the time. The government should have chosen to sever themselves from this and give Chesani his life back, since he was not even involved in the case. I've been to many hearings. I've seen.
Hold on, but the government chose not to do that. They chose to continue persecuting him. Isn't that correct?
Stinking. Yes, they certainly did. They came back within 24 hours. This was after the media said, oh, he's been acquitted. I was in the courtroom. I know he had not been acquitted. He would have been, except that the government had 72 hours to respond from 10 a.m. that day.
Why did George Bush sit on the sidelines, the American war hero, the National Guard pilot? The mission accomplished genius. Why didn't he say case closed at the end of December? He released coke dealers. Why couldn't he release an American hero?
I think it has to do with possibly taking Lipitor. But aside from that, that is disgusting. I have seen evidence that was so poorly presented.
Maybe Bush ought to get off the wagon and start drinking again. He might become a human being.
Oh, Michael, we are just in such trouble. There are two more cases now. Sergeant Jermaine Nelson. Because of the shenanigans on the part
Listen, I don't want to hear it now. I've got to have one day of a victory. I know there are other men lined up to be crucified by the vermin with law degrees in the military who never fired a shot, who never defended us, who go into bars at night. I'm a Marine. They're no Marines. They're no more Marine than a bum in the street, these guys with law degrees marching around there. I respect a combat veteran who becomes a Marine lawyer. Not someone who didn't fight in combat, but yet many of them wear the uniform and act like they're heroes. Okay, they look like kangaroo, like Captain Kangaroo to me, half of them.
They are the non...
All right, I'm going to stop now. I want to stay positive. I don't want to hear negative. No negative. I can't take negative. I want positive. I only want positive. For God's sakes, I need something positive in my life. With what we have for the president, and what we have for the speaker, and what we have for the Republicans... we have a victory here. Now, if the government goes after Chesani again, I told you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get the names of those doing it, and if I can, I'm going to post their home addresses on my website. Then I'm going to bring as many people as I can outside their houses day and night. And then I'm going to ask a million people to come outside their houses day and night until this ends. That's all I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to stop. They're going to leave this man alone. Certain things are worth doing in life. This is one of the things worth doing. You know, there's a saying written in about 1100 by a Jewish sage. It says, he who saves a single life, it is as though he has saved the entire world. And I forget, it was Maimonides wrote that. He who saves a single life, it is as though he has saved the entire world. Now, that's motivated me my entire life. Now, compare that with people who spend their very days thinking how to destroy lives, whether it be Madoff destroying thousands of lives, that evil rat, or others like him who spend every waking minute trying to destroy lives, whether it be financially or physically, hurting people. Now, think about the opposite side of that. Think about the healers. Think about the brain surgeons. Think about the reconstructive surgeons. Think about the spinal injury surgeons, the cardiac surgeons. Think of all of the people who heal the rest of us, and think of what saints they really are, the unrequited sainthoods that are running around this country. And to me, Colonel Chesani is not a saint, but he's a solid hero. To me, he's the real hero. He's the real McCoy. Not because he particularly did something on a Medal of Honor level, for all I know, but because he served our country for 22 years. What kind of country are we going to have if men are not willing to sacrifice their lives to be in the military? And what kind of military are we going to have if men know that when they risk their lives in a firefight and kill the enemy, they're going to face rat vermin with law degrees in cahoots with the Tim McGurks of the world, the Wolf Blitzers of the world, and the other rats on the left side of the spectrum? I'm actually appealing to the Obama administration to show that they really care about our troops. I know that Michelle Obama wants to show that she cares for our troops. I understand that a president's wife is largely a symbolic position. I understand that the First Lady of America always does symbolic things. But I actually believe that from a Machiavellian point of view, it would serve Obama greatly to right now go after those who are going after Chesani and put an X through it and put an X through their careers. I'd like to see the people who went after Chesani be persecuted and prosecuted the way they prosecuted him. I hope they're listening to this show. My only prayer is that you yourself wind up on the other side of the accusations. I pray to God that it happens to you. I pray to God something happens to you in your life where you know what you did to this man. I don't know whether it'll happen to you. It could happen to your wife or your children, God forbid. But it's going to come down upon you as sure as I'm sitting here. The karma that you put down upon this man is going to come back and curse you onto the third generation. Get off his back. Palm Beach, Florida, Hank, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just want to say congratulations on a victory well fought in regards to Colonel Chesani. I put in money when I...
Hank, I understand. It was people who put in $10 and $5 and $20s and $50s that did this. But you got to remember, the lawyers still had a big uphill battle at the Thomas More Law Center. It wasn't just the money. They were committed. You know that the lawyers for Colonel Chesani are all combat Marines who became attorneys?
I was not aware of
I don't
of
know
it.
If you're aware of that. His attorneys were all combat veterans who also got law degrees, who did the right thing instead of the wrong thing, you know? So my listenership, the Savage Nation, you did it. You stopped Harriet Myers, that nobody, from being appointed to the Supreme Court. You remember what we did? You did it. You stopped George Bush from turning our port security over to the wonderful people from Dubai, the really trustworthy, wonderful people from Dubai. You stopped that double-talking John McCain and Kennedy from granting amnesty to 20 million or 30 million illegal aliens. You've had a big impact on this nation. Now, I recognize that we're all living in the doldrums right now. I understand that. I understand we haven't had a good day for a long time, not since this imposter became president. I understand that. But you know what? We have a victory today, and we're going to enjoy this victory today, and we're going to take tomorrow as it comes. That's what I'm saying. Patrick in Chicago, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, you know, what happened to Colonel Sashani was horrible. But to put this on the desk of the president is ridiculous. This is on the desk of the Marine Corps, the commandant of the Marines. To think that the president of the United States read a report from a JAG officer about what happened to a colonel in the Marine Corps is ridiculous. That went up the chain of command. Now, if someone...
Whoa. Patrick, hold on. Listen to me. Bush knew this case was a big one. This had a lot of publicity, not just from this show, but throughout the media. This has gone on for 4 or 5 years. Did Bush not have the power to grant amnesty to people at the end of his administration?
Absolutely, if it was brought to his desk. And I talked to combat Marines who said, all up his chain of command, that's the guys who failed him. His theater commander.
Wait a minute. Why did Bush not pardon Sashani? He could have done so. I announced on the show repeatedly that I pray George Bush will pardon Lieutenant Colonel Sashani. I mean, the American people are not deaf, dumb, and blind. I am sure that they considered whether or not to grant the pardon to Sashani, and Bush chose not to.
He asked for a pardon, Michael. Do you know that for a fact? Because if he didn't ask for a pardon, how could he be given a pardon? Unless the Thomas More Center said, yeah, we filed a presidential pardon for a pardon.
All right. Well, you're raising a fair point. I'm assuming too much about the goodness of man. I'm assuming there are fair-minded government officials who look for right and wrong. I'm sorry, you're right about that. I forgot who's actually running the government on both sides of the aisle. Okay, so there is no fairness in government. So I don't know whether anyone asked Bush to pardon Sashani. We'll look into that. That's a separate story, Patrick. But I will ask the Thomas More Law Center tomorrow, Richard Thompson, when he'll be on this show, whether or not he did so. And I appreciate you raising that issue. San Francisco, Dave, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. You're on the radio. What a great day it is.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Michael, and thank you very much for everything you have done. It's a great victory. I've sent in my money, and as I said, it's a great victory to hear this.
Dave, I want to ask you something. When you say you contributed to the Moore Law Center, in what amount did you send? I want to know.
I sent in a C-note.
You sent $100. That's on the very high side of donations. I think most of them were 10s, 20s, 25s. So you really contributed something because you... What made you contribute money to his defense?
Well, as a Marine, I support the cause, and I'm very distraught and disgusted by murder.
Are you a Marine? I understand the notion thing is you once were a Marine. I know how it works, but you're saying a Marine, you served where?
I still am, yes. I can't talk about it much. I fly the pointy end of a very fast desk, put it that way.
Okay, I missed the whole thing. That's like an in-house thing, but okay, whatever. So why do you think they pursued this persecution of this man? I mean, this was not an ordinary guy. This guy had put in 22 years. Why do you think they picked on him?
Well, I think, Michael, like you said, the liberals have a mental disorder. There's something wrong with these people. I would rather be caught anywhere in the world by our military or our police than anybody else. You know, I mean, it.
Yes, I hear you. I used to give people that choice, the leftists, and their mouths would open up, their jaws would drop, and they'd shut their mouths when I would say things like that to them. Who would you rather be caught by, and who would you rather be interrogated by? The U.S. Marines or the Syrian police or the Egyptian police or the people in the Palestinian territories? You like to have them give you a little grilling? You find out what torture really is? When they gouge your eyes out with a screwdriver and crush your bones with a club with nails in it? They want to know what torture is? When they crush your bones with a bat with nails in it? I'll read to them what torture really is if they want to know what torture really is. It's not putting panties on someone's head and making loud barking sounds.
I want to say, Michael, that you have to continue doing this, that we can't stop. You have to. You know, I sense something in this country. I've noticed this now just for the last couple of months. I think there's a change, a sea change going on. And I think people are...
What a sea change in which direction?
In our direction. I think people are fed up.
I believe the American people are on to the imposter. I believe the imposter is finally been found out for the jester he is. I believe that this man has shot his wad. And I don't care whether they reported at Gallup or anywhere else. The American people know that this guy is either over his head or doesn't know what he's doing at all.
Well, like I said, Michael, I can't take up your whole show, but I want to thank you for everything you've done.
Take up the whole show. I mean, it doesn't matter. You're a great caller. All right, my friend, thank you. I look forward to the day that I have a dinner in honor of Colonel Chesani somewhere in America, and I invite 1,000 or 2,000 contributors to the fund to attend that event. And we have the time of our life, and we know that we did something good in our life, that we counted, that we did, that we counted for something. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Most of us go through the every day of our life leading, you know, ordinary lives, motes in the mire, as it is said, not making much of a difference. Some of us are egomaniacs and think we're making a difference because we have a microphone or there's a camera on us with pancake makeup. But in fact, we don't make much of a difference. It's men like this who make the difference. And we have to be there for them when they're unfairly picked upon. And that's all I'm going to say, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
The knights in the military, we wouldn't have a nation. Never mind what the rat vermin say. Never mind what these left-wing vermin say about this country and the military. Let them all go you know where. Because they wouldn't be here either, were it not for the military and the police. They wouldn't be here. They'd be working in a German concentration camp if they were allowed to live. So the fact of the matter is, we have to do the right thing for the men in uniform. Period, end of story. And if you think that this show, which is never mentioned, has no effect, I want you to guess again. This show may be the most powerful show in the American media. And precisely because the Sovietized America does not mention this program shows you its power. I want to remind you of something that you may not be aware of. Some of you are. During the terrible years of Stalin in the Soviet Union, during the worst of the worst years, the way they dealt with people in the so-called intelligentsia who they didn't want to be heard was they would not mention their names. Their names were not allowed to be mentioned. There was a blacklist, in other words. Certain men such as Solzhenitsyn, and I'm not comparing myself to him, were not mentioned. They were disappeared. Verbally, their names were never mentioned in print by Izvestia, by Pravda. And let me tell you something, ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, LA Times, I don't care what you call it, they are all part of Izvestia or Pravda. There are many, many names. It's Hydra. There's one Hydra-headed media, one gigantic media. It's a Hydra-headed octopus. And this octopus calls itself the truth. But the people know what the truth is. The only hope for this country is the people will never forget what the truth is. There's somehow an intuitive... There's somehow in all people an intuitive ability to know what's right and what's wrong, what's true and what's false, what's light and what's dark, what's up and what's down, what's good and what's evil. There's just somehow an intuitive sense in human beings that keeps this planet spinning on its axis. Because were it not for this intuitive sense of right and wrong, up and down, true and false, this world would have ended a long time ago. And we know that Colonel Chesani is innocent. We know he's a hero. We know he's good. And we know that his persecutors and the prosecutors who went after him are evil. We know they're no good. They didn't just do a job. They didn't just do this because it was a job. Somebody in that Defense Department, somebody in the Bush administration wanted this man burned. And it wasn't that they knew Chesani. That makes it even worse. It wasn't that they had some vendetta against this poor man. No. They wanted to make an example of Chesani, and they wanted to throw his head to the wolves in the media. They wanted everyone in the media to say, see that? We won't let a case like this go unlooked into. We're going to make certain that some big guy's head rolls here. You do know that every other man in that platoon was found innocent up and down the line. You know that. Not one of them was found guilty, because by the rules of engagement, they were in their rights to defend themselves. Now, what kind of military do you think we're going to have if our soldiers have to go to a rule book every time they're in a firefight? Let us say, God forbid, 20 years from now, they have to face off against the Chinese. Do I have to tell you what kind of amorality there is in China? The concept of morality doesn't exist in the Chinese military. They're trained to murder. That's all they're trained for. Any fool understands reality, understands that. And you know something about reality, and that is if you're into sports, if you blink, the other guy's going to kill you, whether it be in a boxing ring, martial arts ring, but more importantly, it could be in the military. If you force our men to second-guess themselves, you may as well put your head into a gas oven and turn the gas on this afternoon. That's all I want to say. God bless America. God bless the Marines. God bless the Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Spokane, Washington. Ryan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was wondering why I haven't heard you really rant more about technology, in particular cell phones and MySpace and Facebook and these other...
Well, first of all, I don't rant. I do expostulations and such, but there are others in the business who might rant on it. What exactly is it that you'd like me to say to make you happy?
Well, everything you say makes me happy. Most of what you say makes me happy, actually. Now, you just made a comment a couple weeks ago.
No, you sounded like a younger woman who was a lib, you know, an Obamaite who wanted me to sound like a fool. No, but really, what are you actually asking?
I'm asking why I don't hear you speak about it more, and don't you think it's one of the major contributors to the downfall of our society, besides liberalism?
Oh, you want me to be a conservative, old fuddy-duddy railing against space, MySpace, and all of that?
No.
Well, I'm not going to do it. I mean, I don't particularly go online to talk to people. I would rather talk to them in person. There are those who do, and it's just another way of meeting people. I don't see anything wrong with it. Eventually, they have to meet each other. Where the human qualities or lack thereof will show. I think it's a more efficient way than going to a bar, for example, and talking to 10,000 strangers until you meet your wife.
All right, I'll give you that. But
I'm saying, like, you know, I watch some of these eHarmony ads. You know, I don't know whether to believe them or not. You know, see happy couples. I don't believe it for a minute. But I would believe that if a person sends in a, you know, here I am, I like this, this is the... Like, what were your colors I like, and music I like, and I like whales, and I like, you know, trees, and I like guns, and all. So you meet a woman like that. Yeah, that's a good start. Can you imagine the amount of time you have to spend randomly trying to meet someone who you have to get through all of that with? So in that sense, I think it's a wonderful way to cut through so many wasted dates, for example.
What about the
cell phones? What's wrong with a cell phone? It's revolutionized communication. I think it's phenomenal. I know people who run billion-dollar businesses on cell phones. They can be anywhere in the world, and they're not imprisoned. It's freed people rather than imprisoned them.
You think so?
I know so. Well, I'm a friend right now who's on vacation in a tropical paradise, still running a company that does a tremendous amount of business. This individual could not do this if he didn't have a cell phone and a BlackBerry.
But you don't think people are kind of walking around hypnotized entranced by their little BlackBerries and cell phones, and they can't leave the house without...
Yeah, but you have less time for neurosis this way. There's less time to fear things. If you're on your BlackBerry with two thumbs, there's less time to worry about the eternal questions. This is much better this way. You just live thinking that you're conquering the universe by pressing keys on a BlackBerry. It's far better than facing the eternal questions that I had to face. You see that? I got you to laugh. I got you. So I take it you're not happy with all these technologies.
I think it's making people very dumb. I think they don't read as much as they used to.
Read? Why are you kidding me? They're reading BlackBerries. They're reading telegram messages on BlackBerries. No need for punctuation. No need for any kind of articulation. It's wonderful. Everyone's been reduced to the level of an ignorant rap musician. What could be better? You talk about democracy. Everyone's now down to a first grade level. What could be better?
It's cutting across all party lines. It's tripartisanship.
So have you tried to find a mate on one of these space pages or whatever?
Oh, I don't know. I met my husband in a bar, so, and we've been married for...
Oh, okay. Thank you for the low blow. Women always win. But that was easy. I wanted you to give me a good gut shot.
I'm a big fan, and I'm not a lib. I'm articulate, but I'm not a lib.
And you also sound like you're a lib. That's the you could be a great reversal. You could really be. You could do a lot of damage to them up in Spokane. Thanks for being a good sport on the Savage Nation. So I have nothing. I have in my pocket, but I carry the old and the new technology. In my pocket, I have, of course, a cell phone. It's people laugh at it. The young ones snicker. Look at that man with a fat cell phone. You know, they think slimmer makes them smarter. I love it. I just love it. What I love is you go into a hotel lobby where there's a bar, which I will do on occasion in San Francisco, and you see the poor young people, they're staring into their palm as though it's sort of a crystal ball. And in this crystal ball is all of their future and all of their hopes or dreams are tied up in their hand. And, of course, everyone's pretending that they're meeting someone there and that they just showed up a little early, even though they're looking for someone. And the chances of them meeting someone are diminished by the fact that they're not looking at anyone while they're really looking for someone, because they're looking into the palm of their hand to pretend that they're actually meeting someone. So as I say, I mean, certainly that inhibits the chance of meeting someone when you're looking into your own hand as though the future lies in your hand. I also, as a social observer, every time I walk past a telephone store now, I laugh to myself. I do have my own sense of humor, which keeps me going here. I walk past, like, Verizon, and it's always the same kind of, like, icky, creepy guys that look like they might be, you know, Pee Wee Herman's on the side. I don't know, like tight pants, weird haircuts, pointy shoes, and kind of like freaky faces. And you see women, you see people sitting at desks with them as though they're in confessionals. Go and look at the people in these Verizon stores as they talk to one of these creepy Pee Wee Herman salesmen about their telephonic needs. And it's as though they're in a confessional or in a psychiatrist's office of 10 years ago, and they're leaning over with their heart on their hand, and this is what I need, and this is what I'm looking for. And the guy's like, I think I have just the exact... This is their whole world is wrapped up in the latest thin telephonic device, which I can never understand. I feel as though I've landed on a strange planet. So in many ways, I do enjoy the current society. It's entertaining for me to look at these things as they go on. Devices, sure, I live on the computer. I'm on 12 hours a day. I'm going blind from it. Cell phone, I have a pocket watch that's not digital. It has a second hand and actual hands that glow in the dark, and it's round like a railroad guy's watch. It's a Timberland Swiss something or another watch from 20 years ago. I like to look at the time as the hand goes around. I didn't tell you this. What a great call for this. I also collect antique clocks. I don't have many. I like French bronze, marble, and such 19th century, early 20th century French three-piece sets. Okay, I have a few of them, and they're all running well. Well, this is strange. One of them, which I've had for 5 years, I bought at auction 10 years ago for $600. It was a steal because it was designed for the export market by the French in the 1890s, and it was designed for export probably to Syria or Egypt because it's designed like a mosque. And it's astounding. Both of the two side candelabra pieces are like little minarets, and the design of the green alabaster marble is that of a mosque. It's gorgeous. And as I say, the French design for overseas markets, it ran fine for 6 years. About a week ago, it stopped running. I hack and forth. No one's going to know where I am and when, and I'm not going to tell you why, where, or how. And it's as though this clock is a pet. It stopped running. I swear to God, I think that clocks have souls. I know that sounds crazy, but I know that pets have souls because they behave weirdly too when they know you're leaving them or you're ditching them or you're not thinking right about them. They start, you know, like peeing in strange places in your house, hopefully not in your shoes while you're sleeping at night. But again, even my dog is acting up, and I have to tell him, look, if you keep it up, you're not coming with me. Naturally, that makes him more nervous, so he does more of the sneaky stuff. And then I say, well, you're not coming with me. So he does it again that night. So it's a vicious circle. But the fact of the matter is I also collect the antique clocks. And yesterday, last night, I had my clocksmith come over. I'm not going to divulge his name nor his story. But after work, I went home and I asked this clocksmith who came over, who was trained. You want to believe this story? Here he is working on my clock. He has a screwdriver that's a German screwdriver, maybe 70 years old. I look at it immediately and see the quality of the machining on the screwdriver. I know it wasn't made in China out of pressed steel. And I show him some tools that my father left for me when he died. You won't believe how beautiful these things are. And we're talking about tools and clocks and watches. And I said, didn't you have to apprentice to become a clocksmith? He said, yes, I did. He said, I had to become an apprentice for several years. And in order to pass the apprenticeship exam, I had to make a clock. We all did. I said, well, when you go, when you die off, I mean, he's an elderly gentleman, are there any people around who still can fix a clock? He said, surprisingly few. And that's it. So I said, I don't know. All these clocks are going to stop and not run again because there's no one learning how to fix a clock. Now, why would somebody waiting online in New York City in the freezing rain for a job with DHS, ICE, or FBI want to learn how to fix a clock when they might actually have to go to school, master a trade, pass an exam, when in the option they could just simply go to work and sit on their behinds as though they're still in college, go out at night and get drunk and come to work in the morning and try to capture Osama bin Laden or his minions before they set off another bomb in the subway? Because after all, if you grew up on cell phones and the internet and you never had to prove anything because you were just pushed ahead in school because of various and sundry liberal policies, you assume that you're as good as the next person when you've never been tested. Now, it may turn out that you are actually as good as the next person, if not better. But because of the liberal educational system, many kids don't even know what they're capable of, and they think, therefore, they can do anything.
Savage.
The plain dealer in Cleveland. You know, the turn of the last century, that made sense. In other words, people turned to that paper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, meaning they spoke the truth. Today, they don't speak the truth. Today, what they speak is a global speak, you know, perv speak. It's not the plain dealer, it's the perv dealer. Or look at the Los Angeles Times. Look at the names of these papers. Some of them were glorious in their heyday. The Boston Globe tumbled 6.6% to only 360,000 a day. Why? Why are people in Boston turning away from the so-called globe? Because it's not a representation of the actual globe. It's a representation of the perverts in the newsroom, the leftists and the perverts in the newsroom. That is the number one reason that their circulation is declining. Do you understand this? Now you say, well, how do you know that? I didn't read that. Of course you didn't read it. They're the ones who write the paper. They're going to let you read that the reason their circulation is plummeting is because they're all left-wingers and perverted? 99% of them are sexual deviants? Who else is in the newspaper business? Who else would take a job like that? Anybody else would go out and make a living as a webmaster or owning a car wash? I don't know, but why would you go in the news business unless you were sick? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Where were you when the Shabup Shabup song came out? I don't even know who did that song and what year it was. I remember that it was a time that I was driving to Brooklyn. I think I had a girlfriend in Brooklyn tonight. There was a, that's right. And we'd sit and watch the at night on the side with the roads off the Belt Parkway, steaming up the windows. But if you were in Dad's car, the problem was they had, in those days, they preserved cars. Like, they always thought they were going to go into the Henry Ford Museum cars in those days. Every father bought a car, and they put plastic on the seats to preserve the seats. Now, today you buy a car, you throw it out after 2 years, you trade it in. Figure an illegal alien will buy it, you know, and take it down with it and do a lowrider on it and a wheel. But those days, they thought they were buying it forever, like a century, a minimum of a century. It was going to go into the Henry Ford Museum so that you couldn't nick it, you couldn't touch it, you couldn't get in it. You couldn't touch the wheel, don't touch the radio, your hand was slapped unless you had a glove on. And they covered the seats with plastic. Now, I got to tell you something. If, let's say, you had a girl on the other side of town and it was Dad's car and the seats were covered with plastic and it was -5, let me tell you, it was not a lot of fun. It was not conducive towards warmth in that car. But you tried. You did your best. I got to tell you something. Thank God there was alpaca coat. There were alpaca coats. There was wool. There were wool coats. They knew how to make a coat in those days. And you can get around that problem of the plastic seat. And then at the end of the day, you were glad your father put plastic on the seat, to be honest with you. He was ahead of the curve in a way. Cincinnati, Ohio. So what's on your mind, Dave?
Michael, at some point I'm thinking about running as an independent for political office, and I'd like to get your ideas and input regarding what you think are the key qualifications for a politician or an elected official.
Number one, you have to have more hair than your competitor. That's the number one. Well, if you want to win, never mind good qualities. I'm talking about winning qualities. You're two different things. Good qualities and winning qualities are two different things. Winning qualities, one requires good hair. I've studied elections going back 8 elections, and he who had more hair won. I know you think it's crazy. I swear it's like nuts. It works. Whoever had more hair won. Bush had more hair than Kerry, slightly more hair. I counted the hairs on his head. Okay, let's get serious, Dave. What are the good qualities? A, you have to be attractive, physically attractive. If you look like Dennis Kucinich, the most you could do is run a mortuary in the 19th century in a Western movie. You could play a mortician in a Western movie. How could this man run for anything? The guy looks like a mortician in a 19th century Western, like a daguerreotype. Dennis Kucinich looks like the type of body. In other words, I used to love to look at photographs of like war, the war dead, war photos. And there was a time in my life that I studied the Civil War, the daguerreotypes, and it's sad. You see all the dead people and you look at them. Look, there's a certain kind of macabre sense of humor and a certain macabre sense of soul that I have. So if you look at the dead on the battlefield of the Civil War, God rest all their souls, Dennis Kucinich looks very much like many of the dead on the battlefield of the Civil War. So if you look like him, I would not suggest running for office. And that's number one. You have to be good looking. Number two, you have to have a good voice. Number three, tell the truth. In terms of internal qualities, tell the darn truth and the people will flock to you. David, they don't want double talk. They don't want double speak. They don't want glib talk. They don't want proselytization. They want someone to tell them like it is, and they'll line up for you. You know, I got to tell you, David, when I had my first child, I didn't know how to raise a child. How does a young person know how to raise a child? Tell me, you think you know? You don't know. You know nothing. And I'll never forget as long as I live. I was living in Hawaii at the time when we came home. Actually, yeah, my father had died. We came home for the funeral. God rest his soul. I'm talking a long time ago. And there were a few uncles around after the funeral. Now it's coming back to me. And I remember asking, you know, we're having a few drinks and eating and this and that. And how do you raise a child? And I'll never forget it. The consensus was, if you love your child and you tell them the truth, that child will work out okay. It turned out to be true. And I think it's true in a democracy with intelligent people. I think that would work better than all of this nonsense with Tim Russert and this idiot and that idiot.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
My father was an immigrant. Yeah, he came here when he was 13 or 7. I don't even know. He was not born here. I was born here. And he was a citizen when I was born here. I'm not an anchor baby. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an anchor baby. But I have one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world. So I really speak from, let's say, a knowledgeable position about it. I understand what it's like to live in a poor household with many people. Trust me, we lived in a place. We didn't even have a bedroom in the Bronx. And I think about it. There was one bedroom, and there was a tiny living room with a fake fireplace. And I remember we hung fake stockings on the fake fireplace. I thought Santa would give me a gift. So, you know, part in the old world, part in the new world. My grandmother didn't speak a word of English in the house. She spoke the old languages from the old country. I couldn't believe, I'm not thinking about it now. And she was so wonderful. Oh, did I love her. God, did I love that woman. She was so beautiful. Very stoic. Very, very Russian, this woman. She spoke to me in Russian, by the way. I don't think you know that. I never told you that. I am not a Russian language speaker, but it's strange. I can understand the language to a certain extent. And it's a very hard language for an American to learn, incidentally. It's not an easy language. The alphabet's very complicated for an English speaker. I can just imagine how hard English is to learn for a Spanish speaker, by the way. It's not an English. English is a tough language, incidentally. Very tough. But in my home, my parents spoke only English. So to make a long story short, here I am, man-child in the promised land. And when my turn came to assume my mantle in this country and my chosen profession, they said white men need not apply. The positions are closed. So you can understand where I was coming from. So to make a long story short, I cut a Virgin demo in 1993, and I send it out to about 220 radio stations. I get a return from about 5 to 10 of them. And 5 of them say, that's really good stuff. Would you like to work on our station? I remember to this day, one of them was in Boston, of all places. I don't remember the station that said, we like what you did. But nevertheless, I was living in San Francisco, as I am now, and one of them came from a local station, and the guy says to me, good stuff. Would you like to come on in and talk to us? And then they gave me a fill-in. Well, anyway, here's the Virgin demo, 1993, Savage's Virgin demo, play 01.
And now, direct from the towers above Manhattan, it's the Michael Savage Show. To the right of Rush and to the left of God, and now, Michael Savage.
I'm glad I can be with you 7 nights a week, because these stories are just not going away. I mean, every day in every way we're getting assaulted. Look at these questions before us today. Look at the questions before us. You know, they say that I'm to the right of Rush and to the left of God. I really don't think that that's funny. I really don't think that's funny at all. Do immigrants carry diseases? Are lawyers really humans? Is white bread safe to eat? How come women with mustaches, with peace and love and turtle-saving bumper stickers, are the most likely to cut you off on the highway? Is Bill Clinton's mother a lesbian? By the way, a quick note. Nazis, skinheads, KKK, don't call me. Crawl back into your bunkers. You've given true conservatives a bad name because you permit the sick leftists to paint all conservatives with the fascist brush, okay? Don't call me. Do Labor Secretary Reich's feet touch the ground when he's seated on talk shows? I don't know. But these are some of the questions that I think we have to answer here. Because
all right, let's pause. You see how daring this was? Do you see how good? Now you say, well, it's commonplace today. It was not commonplace in 1994, by the way. It was really daring. It broke open new ground. I changed the media landscape. And that's it. That's how I started. Then I did a show. I'll never forget it. I'm going to just tell you the story, and then we're going to move on because it's the end of the weather. I'll never forget it. So the local station manager calls me, and he says, would you like to fill in? I said, sure, I'll try it. Now, I had never done radio except on book tours. I had done 10 national book tours where you go around and do radio and television. They were very stressful. But along the way, I remember various program directors had said to me, you know, you're really good on the radio. You should consider a career in radio. I had no way. How could you get a job in radio? It was as real to me as becoming an astronaut. Of course I wanted to do it. But I didn't know. How would you get into radio? It seemed as difficult as becoming an astronaut. I had no way to do it, so let me put it to you that way. But let me tell you something. Desperation breeds creativity, and creativity breeds you take a lot of chances. And anyway, this is it 15 years later. I think that fate had a hand in this and God. I think I really was set out to do this from the beginning. All right, so he says fill in. All right, the first show I fill in for is on a liberal talk station in San Francisco. It's still there. It's a powerhouse, 50,000 water. And he gives me a show to fill in for that guy is on the overnight show, and he's a hater of the lowest order, hates white people, panders to the most, let's say a Reverend Wright type. As exactly a Reverend Wright. All night long, hate radio against whites, against America. He himself, of course, is living the high life, as is Reverend Wright in his new $10 million house. You understand how it works. Curse America and go and laugh all the way to the bank, you know. Yeah. All they needed was the Kool-Aid, like a Jim Jones job. So that's the kind of show I didn't know, really. I never listened to the cretin. I'm never up in the middle of the night. So he said, all right, I go on the air, and I start to tell about illegal immigrants and this and that. I get hate callers like I have never encountered in my life, because remember what my last incarnation was. I was the good doctor. I was the nutritionist and the herbalist who gave lectures around the world. And by the way, I had even given a lecture. You'll never believe this story. I don't think I've told it. Normally, I would give lectures about health and vitamins and nutrition in America. At one point, I was director of nutrition for a major international nutrition company. They sent me to Malaysia to talk about their products. My audience were all Muslim women. So I go into the audience. I could not believe it. They were all Muslim women. They were a great audience. These were moderate Muslim women who were interested in nutritional supplements. they received it very well. I spoke, and it was translated. So I had been all over the world doing lectures, and I was usually very well received. And frankly, I was like the beloved doctor kind of thing. Now I do talk radio, and I walk into a propeller of hatred from the left. I never encountered such hatred from the people that were the regular listeners of this guy's show. That night at 5 in the morning when the shift ended, remember what it was? I think it was 1 to 5 in the morning. I don't remember. I drive home from that station. The whole way home, I'm like in a paranoid state. I'm looking in the rearview mirrors. I thought I was being followed. I get home. The next day, I say to my family when I got home and they woke up, I said, I'm never going to do radio as long as I live. I said, I can't take the hatred of the callers. The liberals are the most hateful people I've ever encountered in the world. I said, no amount of money on earth would be worth doing this. I called the station. Actually, they called me the next day when I woke up, and they said, wow, you did a great job, Savage. Would you like to fill in again? I said, no, I would never fill in again as long as I live. I don't want to ever do radio again. Ask them. I'm not making it up. I said, well, they said, why? I said, I'm not going to go into a show like that again with these haters. They said, well, how about filling in during the day? I said, I don't know. I don't think I could do radio again. It's too hateful. The people who call it are full of hate, the left-wingers. Well, they said, okay, I'll tell you what, you won't have to do a night shift again. You'll do a day shift. And then, I swear, then I did a little fill-in on the day, and I shook up the whole local media. Then eventually they created a local conservative station, and I went on that. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Remember, I had a fairly good living. I was making a good living as an author and as a consultant. And I didn't want anything to do with radio, but the temptation was too great. And I got to tell you something else. Radio, you ask anyone in the media who knows how to do it right, they'll all tell you the same thing. Nothing in the world of media can compare to the high you get off radio. There's nothing that can compare to the feelings you get when you do this right. There's no performance in the world that equals radio. I don't care what you do for a living. Look, I wrote books. I'm not a Dostoevsky. I didn't write fiction. But I wrote really fine nonfiction. My nonfiction were all Persian miniatures. They're excellent. In fact, my first book, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, is still in print. I wrote books to last. They were not just fluff. I was a craftsman as a writer. However, writing is a very difficult profession because it takes a year to conceive of a book, 2 years to write a book, till it comes out is like another 9 months. By the time it's out, you're not connected to the product anymore, to the work. There's no immediate feedback. And here's an interesting side note. I had an editor at Houghton Mifflin in Boston when I wrote A Maximum Immunity, a book that went into 6 different languages. It was a great book, by the way. It's still around. I mean, maybe it's a little out of date in some ways, but in terms of describing the immune system, it's a very good book. The editor, who was a really high-class old Bostonian, took me to lunch in one of the great Boston restaurants, and she said to me, you know, you really are made for radio. More so than you are for writing. I said, are you insulting me? She said, no, listen to what I'm saying. She said, you're a guy who's got so much energy, and you're so immediate, and you can deliver an idea immediately from the top of your head perfectly. She said, you need immediate feedback. She said, you can't get that from writing. She's absolutely right. So there's nothing like radio. It's like riding a horse bareback. I don't know how else to put it. It's like speeding across a plane on a horse without a saddle. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Other forms of media, are like riding riding the trotters at Yonkers. You've got a three-wheeled vehicle underneath you and a horse and a bridle. Or some may approach, let's say, riding in another manner. But there's nothing like riding a horse across the plains without a saddle while firing a bow and arrow. That's radio. I'll be right back. Tennessee, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'd like to hear your story about the Making Love by the Sewer Plant. I love that one because it reminds me of something.
Why do you like Love by the Sewer Plant? There's not a dirty word in it, you know.
Well, I know. I guess that's a problem for certain people I know elsewhere because they always like a gory, horrible stuff, you know.
No, if you want XXX, you know, pornographic literature, you can get that on HBO any night. You can get it from anywhere you turn. But when I write Love by the Sewer Plant or The Nympho in Alley Pond Park, there's not one F word, not S word, nothing. because what it is about life. And if life is poignant, you don't need to shock people with filthy words. That's for the subliterate inner-city psychopaths who don't have the English language at their disposal. So they have to revert to the F word and the S word. You know what I'm saying?
I had a crush on this girl once that never happened, you know, and I had – it's basically I, you know, imagined things. You know how young people are.
How long ago was this?
Well, it was actually over 15 or 16 years ago. I was in middle school, you know.
50 or 60 years ago or 15 or 16?
Or 16 years ago.
Oh. You know, that's an interesting question for a show. It's an interesting question for a radio show. Are there people listening to this show who still burn a flame for a love going back decades, someone you've not seen? That is... You know, I think people carry around these idealized images of someone that they were going out with or whatever, and it didn't work out, and they think, oh, I missed the boat, I should have married her, you know? And you know what makes me think of that? I watched a movie last night that I couldn't tell you, that I can tell you, I love, Ben Stiller in The Heartbreak Kid. Did you ever see that movie?
Oh, I've heard of it. I like it.
Oh, it's so good. Send the fellow a book. I got to tell you that I'm going to take a minute on this. You know, I don't get too involved in comedy movies. I happen to think Ben Stiller is a comic genius. I think he's the best. I really like the guy. I know he's a liberal. Doesn't matter to me. I judge the man by his art. His politics are not my concern right now. He's a fabulous comedian, and so is his father. Comes from a very fabulous – you can see he became this way because his father – his timing is so much better than Woody Allen, who's the Stephen Fetchett of the Jewish genre, that they're not even in the same category. Woody – I mean, this guy is so good, Ben Stiller. Anyway, he did a movie called – The Heartbreak Kid. So it opens in San Francisco, and the street scenes are great. And he's you know, a dating guy, single guy, and he's walking down the street, and a pickpocket, a mugger, grabs a pocketbook from a purse from a girl and bangs into him, and, you know, he tries to get the purse back, then he gets sprayed in the eye, and then she says, oh, thanks for helping me, but he doesn't get the bag back, and she's a stunningly good-looking blonde girl. I forget her name, I don't even know. And blah, 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 they fall in love, and he's still afraid to get married because he's a typical single guy, doesn't want to commit. They get married, and they go on a honeymoon to Cabo San Lucas. It is a scream, what she turns out to be. She's a singer. She's a hummer. It turns out she has a deviated septum from being a coke user. She's a sex maniac. In other words, it's a stereotype of everything possible wrong with a woman of your dreams. Turns out that that's who she was. And instead of being Miss Innocent Christmas Face, she turns out to be a complete nightmare. And he's trying to tell her in Cabo San Lucas that he's fallen in love with another woman at the hotel while he's married to her on the honeymoon. And this other woman's like Miss Innocent, you know. Anyway, I can't give away all the details, but the plot is so intricate and so well done, and his timing is so good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But it brought to mind how many people out there must carry around some idealized picture of some woman or some guy they knew 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, they're in a bit, let's say you're in a bad marriage, which is par for the course. And you think, I've compromised. What if I had gone with John, let's say? What if I'd married my college sweetheart instead of this lunk that I'm stuck with, all these years? You know, what you don't realize, like, you're idealizing what John was. You know, go take a look at John today if he's still living. So let's go to the callers immediately on the Savage Nation, starting with Dominic in Las Vegas. Dominic, thank you. What makes you call the show today, my friend?
Hi, Dr. Savage.
Hello.
I just wanted to tell you, when I was 17 years old, I met a Jewish girl. She was 15. And I put her tattoo. Her name was Connie White. I put a tattoo of her name on my arm. And I loved her to no end, but she was Jewish, and the father didn't approve of me because I was Italian. He says oil and water don't mix.
Little did he know about oil and vinegar.
That's oil and vinegar. So he says to me,
that's what I would have said to him. You're right, but oil and vinegar do. So what happened?
He never said it to me. He said it to other people. They came back and told me. In fact, my Jewish friends, when he used to call up the candy store, we used to hang out at Lenox Road and Albany Avenue, and there was a candy store on the corner. And he used to call up, and I put my Jewish friend on the phone. He would talk Jewish to him, so he thought I was Jewish until he found out I was Italian.
So you remember this girl to this day?
I sure do, and that's 61 years ago.
Oh, come on. Well, I raised the question of, do guys or women remember first loves or, you know, college sweethearts? So have you been married and all of that through all these years?
I married 44 years. My wife passed away 10 years ago. I would have been married 54 years. I have three daughters, one 54, 52, and 46.
Oh, my God.
This girl.
And you still remember the first love? Is that what you still remember your first love?
You better believe it. That's my first love.
The girl that you didn't marry?
The girl I didn't marry. And the reason I didn't marry, because her husband said, if you go with him, I'm going to disown you. So I walked out of the picture. She said, I don't care what my father said.
Oh, this is interesting. So what happened with her?
You know what? I don't even know. I don't know. And I walked out.
Oh, wait, what's her name? Maybe she's listening. What's her name?
Connie White.
Connie White?
Yeah, W-H-I-T-E.
All right, Connie, if you're listening to the Savage... Connie, if you're somewhere out there listening to the Savage Nation... I don't care where you are, Boca Raton, healthy, unhealthy, whatever. Call the number. I'm going to connect you up with Dominic. God only knows stranger things have happened in the world, Dominic, huh?
That was right, but I still love her.
You still love her, no less.
Sure do.
You know, here's the funny thing, Dominic. Young people don't realize that people who get older still have emotions of this type. They think that people over a certain age no longer have passion or sexual drive or yearnings. They don't understand that those things are eternal in a person's heart.
Oh, and you know what, Dr. Savage? It didn't matter where we were, and we didn't have material things then. I'd walk around the cemetery, Holy Cross Cemetery in Brooklyn, and hold her hand and give her a kiss every now and then. And in 2 years, I went with her. I never touched her because I wanted to preserve her for marriage, which I never got to even touch her.
That's how it was in those days. I remember my first, actually, love by the sewer plant. I remember the girl saying to me, she said to me, no, we shouldn't go all the way. And I said to her, why? She said, because I want to save that for marriage. It's a special thing. And, you know, that was enough for a guy who had a certain sense of dignity in those days. I mean, if you respected the woman, let's put it that way, you know, not in every case.
I'm in Vegas. It's such a different world now. Before, you had to fight for it. Now it's so easy, you know.
Now they throw it at you. You don't have to fight. You have to fight against it now.
Girls give themselves so easily. It's not. You don't even want it.
Yeah, but I'm not from Brooklyn. I'm from the Bronx. Nevertheless, it's close enough. Thanks for the call, Dominic. You got to remember, they were once young, and that old person that you're looking at, the face may be wrinkled, but the heart is as smooth as it was when they were a baby. And the heart still beats sometimes for memories that you youngsters don't understand are still inside that person. They're no different than you. The blink of an eye, you're going to be inside that wrinkled face.
Savage.